arrive here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Uryu, and we are your TV BFFs. And this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows that you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guest will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows, while choosing from the three genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and unscripted. So let's get right to our guest this week and find out what is in his top six. We're super excited to have him with us today. He is a writer, a performer, a comedian, a game show creator, and he hosts an America's Next Top Model podcast called Pod Lead'em. Please welcome J.W. Crump.
Hey, y'all.
J.W., thank you so much for coming on.
I'm so excited to be on the podcast that I've done the most prep work than any podcast I've ever been on.
We love to hear it.
And we get that a lot. We won't lie. We get that a lot, but it's a point of pride for us. You know, you have to do a touch of homework, but we hope that it's fun and worthwhile and is enjoyable to do.
It's kind of a fun puzzle to put together because really for me, it wasn't so much about, and y'all have seen my like list of what they are, but it wasn't hard for me to be like, here's a dozen or so shows that I love.
Sure.
But then it was really the best, favorite, and forever part of it that I was like, oh, which is like, I would say best. Because all of them could be favorites.
Right.
But then for me, the favorites, and I know y'all don't like to say guilty pleasure, and I agree with that. But for me, favorites are one that maybe I like, but I wouldn't like enthusiastically recommend to other people.
Fair enough. I like that.
Well, that's what your favorite should be. It's like the show that like means the most to you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then did you have a distinction that you took into account when thinking about the forevers?
Yeah, I don't know if I did this purposely, but I realized that a lot of my forevers are the ones that have the most episodes.
Smart.
So it did end up, it feels like when you hear my list that I reverse engineered it to just get the most bang for my buck in this like theoretical afterlife of television that you've created. And I feel like the best ones are ones that ended up being really heavy on the writing being very good.
Oh, okay.
And I think that just probably comes from being a writer myself. Like that's something that I'm very more critical of. So to be the best, you have to be good. Because my favorites do not have good writing. not only one. Only one would I argue has good writing.
Oh my God, I'm really excited to see what these are. But before we get to your BFF criteria, we want to know a little bit more about your personal TV history. So we are going to start with you revealing to us the shows that almost made your list. So these are the shows that didn't make your top six, but they only just missed the cut. So they might not be your TV BFFs, but they're still pretty good friends.
Yeah, one of the ones, and this was my only late night show. This was my only like that genre at all, was The Rundown with Robin Thede.
Ooh, a recent late night show.
Talk to me about this.
Yeah.
Because I love her, but I never watched that. But I love Black Lady Sketch Show, and I think she's so funny.
Yes, and I love Black Lady Sketch Show as well. I've seen all the episodes. To me, Robin Thede is, her superpower is in her hosting. I think she just glows. It was on BET, if you're not familiar with it. It only had one season, but it was a longer season. I feel like it had 20 to 30 episodes total. It had more jokes per minute than any late night show. And it was also unapologetically Black, while also I never felt lost.
Oh, cool.
Because the joke writing was so good that it kind of didn't matter when I didn't get specific references.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some stuff that was universal. There's still one joke that I won't say because I'll butcher it, that was about grandma's purse candies in church, that I was just like, my life was like fishing out my grandmother's purse candies, and I related so hard.
I have a recommendation that you may have seen already, but also someone who lives in that theta universe is Amber Ruffin.
Oh,
you know, she was a part of Black Lady Sketch Show. And I think she has the late night show on right now. That's my favorite. And I think similarly to you, like also feels unapologetically Black while also like it's a show for everybody at the same time.
You cannot dislike Amber Ruffin.
No, you cannot.
I refuse. I've read the book she wrote with her sister, Lacey.
Me too. You'll never believe what happened to Lacey.
I got the audiobook. I said read. I wanted to hear them talk because they have. She has the best delivery. It's amazing.
I mean, honestly, what I'm loving about this is two white men discussing how much they love shows that are unapologetically Black. Like, you guys are just warming my heart. Because, like, that, like, I didn't watch The Rundown with Robin Thede, but that's what I love so much about Black Lady Sketch Show is, like, I feel like every single sketch, I'm like, you wrote this for me. Yes.
The first sketch I watched of that was on YouTube, and it was The Jury.
With the whole Black courtroom.
Yeah. And I'll watch Yvette Nicole Brown do anything.
Yeah.
She can read a cookbook to me. And I just love that she was in there.
JW, what else was an almost...
Happy Endings, the sitcom.
Oh, Be Still My Canceled Too Soon Heart. I loved that show.
This was the closest of the almost to being a real thing.
Oh, okay.
I just, again, jokes per minute. Such an amazing cast. It's all on Hulu right now. Do yourself a favor if you've never seen Happy Endings and just get ready to laugh. I think what cut it down for me of being the actual best is that I can't recommend every season equally.
How many were there? Three?
Three. The first season was a half season in terms of like the 22 episode structure. Anything from season two and three, watch, you'll love.
Mm-hmm.
Season one, it took about six or seven episodes to find what the groove was, what the idea was, and honestly, to get away from the initial plot line of the dumped at the altar thing that they just truly didn't need.
And Happy Endings has been on my list to watch. I'm going to do it.
It's so fun. I'm glad it's streaming and widely available.
Yeah, for sure.
So another almost, there were two shows that I watched before school, and they were the English dub of Sailor Moon. And then the first 15 minutes of Living Single.
Why the first 15 minutes?
Because then I had to leave for school. But then I recorded it on VHS. And then I watched the last of the episode when I got home. So I watched the final 10 minutes or whatever when I got home. So I'd just be in like third period being like, how's Khadijah going to get out of that one? Just like fully invested in that plot line of Living Single. But always, I don't think I've actually ever watched an episode like all at once. I've only seen them in weird two-act structures. But Living Single's my almost favorite. I'm sure if you watched it like any sitcom, there are hits and misses. People can talk about Friends all they want. Give me Living Single. I thought they were funnier. I thought they were great. Every single character. The last two for almost favorite are The Original Charmed and Cougar Town.
Wow. Cougar Town. Underrated, long-running comedy, I feel.
I love Courtney Cox. I love Busy Phillips. I found it so witty, so fun. Finally a vehicle for Courtney Cox to just be funny.
Yeah. And like weird.
And not neurotic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not the pill of the group.
Right.
And then The Original Charmed, you know what? I'm going to tell you right now, it is not a good show. But I own all eight seasons on DVD. I own the entire season 9 and 10 comic book series.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah, I've watched so many recaps and other funny things about it. I talk to friends about it all the time. But every time I watch it, I'm like, this is bad.
It's like peak CW. Like, well, I'm sorry, it was WB, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was Dawson's Creek was up.
Oh, so good. Another almost Sailor Moon.
Okay.
Ooh.
I've watched now the English dub, the Japanese original, like, all that. It's got, the original anime has 200 episodes.
Oh, wow.
It's like kind of evergreen IP.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's like an honor to be chosen to be the voice actor of one of the characters because you grew up with them. And to see these people, they now like sometimes tape the moment where they get the phone call that they're going to play Sailor Mercury or whatever, tears streaming down people's faces.
Aww.
Like it's, and I love the idea of someone getting a part that is so iconic to them that they like want to bring it. And I feel like you can feel that love in the property, which is always fun.
That's awesome.
Okay. Well, let's get to your TV BFF criteria. That was like an amazing almost list, JW.
It may have been our best if we're talking about best favorite and forever almost show discussions, that may be one of our best.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I am really looking forward to your actual criteria. So, you know, we asked you to pick 6 shows in total with 2 shows in each of the 3 categories. So those categories are best, favorite, and forever. So your best shows are the ones that you think are the most artistic, well executed, or just overall just the best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart and mean something to you personally. And your forever shows, if you die tomorrow and in the afterlife, you get to choose 2 shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over for infinity. What are they?
Right. So there are a couple guidelines. For each category, we have you choose from the 3 overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted. And unscripted means really everything from reality shows to documentary series, game shows, talk shows. That's kind of a bit of a catch-all category. There must be multiple episodes, so no one-offs allowed. But other than that, it can be anything. And as you mentioned before, no such things as guilty pleasures here. If you love it, let's talk about it. There is one rule. You cannot double up on a genre in 2 of your 3 categories. So if you picked, for instance, 2 dramas in your best, 2 prestige dramas, your favorite and forever need to split genre. So you can't double up in those as well. So with that, let's get to it. We're going to start with the best. So JW, what is your first best show?
My first best is American Dad.
Ooh, first time we've gotten this one.
Yeah,
let's get into it.
In any category.
I have one of my favorite jokes from it, framed page of the script in my apartment. I read it almost every day. There are a bunch of reasons I love it. One, it's the kind of show that as a comedy writer, when you speak to another comedy writer and one of you brings up American Dad and the other person immediately reacts and wants to talk about it, to me, that's a sign that the person really understands good comedy writing. And to see the vibe that happens between those two people is so fun. I also love it because it was a quote unquote ripoff of Family Guy, but American Dad, its current season is still practically the same quality as its best seasons. While Family Guy, I've watched a recent episode and that is not the case.
Now, when you say ripoff, do you mean like done in the shadow of, or was it like a spinoff from the same creators? Like, what do you mean by?
Oh, Seth MacFarlane. It was, you know, when after Family Guy was a success, Seth MacFarlane made American Dad, The Cleveland Show, etc. And they were basically all a family unit. Here's what that thing is. For American Dad, very early on, the whole deal was conservative father, liberal geeky son, liberal daughter, like, etc. And that was the bare basic of it. But what makes American Dad stand on its own compared to the other ones that have fallen by the wayside is it is so good at creating characters that stay in character for all of their jokes. Like, it doesn't have cutaway gags. It's just funny. And also, very specifically, they wrote 2 characters that other animated sitcoms, and I'll just say sitcoms, don't do that well. The mom, Francine, is one of the funniest characters. And that character is always shoved to the side. I don't know the last time I ever, even in the original, like, heydays, ever laughed at a Lois line.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Family Guy. Francine is hysterical. She, like, is, like, very passionate and aggressive, but also dumb in a way that she just, like, she kind of has the energy that they normally give to the husband character.
Okay.
And I think it makes it so fun that they don't make her naggy. They don't make her shrill. They don't do all those things that animated sitcoms want to do. And then also Roger, I will say, is the single best character ever created.
Now, is Roger the alien, right? Okay. And why is there an alien in this family unit, real quick, for those who haven't seen it, like myself, who this is a blind spot for me. I never quite got into the show.
Oh, yeah. I will send you a top 2 or 3 episodes.
Perfect. Yes,
I would love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I love it. And Roger's the alien. And it's the original plot was Stan works, the father figure, works for the CIA. And this was an alien that is living in their attic that he's hiding because he kind of befriended him and they were going to chop him up or whatever.
Got it.
Roger is the best queer character on television.
Wow.
Roger while like using he, him pronouns and, you know, the name's Roger and he's most of the time presenting as masculine, he dresses up in characters all the time. That's like his bit.
Okay.
And he dresses equally up as male and female, non-binary, otherwise characters. And the family and the world does not treat him any differently. He is also unabashedly bi-pansexual.
Nice.
And it does not matter. It doesn't even get questioned. It gets questioned that he's so attracted and horny and always doing schemes and stuff, but it's never gay panic.
Mm.
It's never that kind of stuff. And he just gets to exist and be, but also he's definitely the villain and the bad guy. And it's amazing that he feels so progressive in so many different ways.
No, Roger, this is about you. The last 2 months, your selfish behavior has gotten out of control. Stan, tell him.
Well, for starters, you constantly raid the fridge and drink all my Five Alive.
You take our clothes without asking and then disappear all day so you can run around as one of your ridiculous personas.
I regret my dance card is filled for the evening, but there's always the spring cotillion.
I'll tell you what I think. I think you hide behind all these disguises so you don't have to face the fact that the real you is an inconsiderate jerk.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how you treat people when you could blame it on Professor Edelstein or AT&T operator Sholanda Dykes. Speaking of which, that credit for my friends and family plan still hasn't shown up on my bill.
That credit was generated after your last statement. It'll show up on your next bill.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you for choosing AT&T.
The last thing I'll say about this, because, and I think this is just so listeners know, I just, the most recent episode that I listened of you guys was your BIPOC episode. And so I was thinking about this because I remember this about American Dad, that when the Cleveland show came on, you know, obviously it was about a Black family, had mostly, although not the main character, Black actors playing the voice roles.
Right.
There was a poll that happened that said more African-American audiences liked and watched American Dad, other than the Cleveland show, which was quote unquote made for that audience. And wow, they were asked why. And they're like, because American Dad is irreverent to the references that we actually know and love, because the son, Steve, loves R&B. So he's constantly singing and referencing those songs. Mm. And you can tell that they actually have a reference for, I would say, Black American culture and mm-hmm. incorporate it into jokes. Like, there's a lot of songs and references that they make that I like have to Google real quick because it's not something I necessarily grew up with. And I think that's, again, just another special thing. And I think it's so interesting that the show that could have been nothing ended up being so pro-woman and so pro-cultures other than just white cultures and so pro-queer and like all these things. And it's just because they gave characters depth.
Wow. Mm. JW, I have to say, my whole opinion about American Dad has been completely turned on its head.
Yeah, it's completely turned on its head. I mean, first of all, I didn't know there were that many episodes. Second of all, it actually makes so much sense you saying that Black audience are really connected with them, because I feel like I started watching it like with my dad, because we thought we obviously thought Family Guy was so funny. But like, I don't ever remember watching the Cleveland show.
I don't have a single Black friend who says they've ever watched the Cleveland show. I truly don't.
All right, so we got American Dad as your first best pick. What's going up next to American Dad is your in your second slot here?
Best classic sitcom to me is The Facts of Life.
I love it.
Ooh, okay, so we're doubling up in the best category.
Yeah, this is my double. This is my comedies. The Facts of Life is a show that, first of all, I watch episodes now and they hold up. And I mean hold up in terms of comedy and hold up in terms of progressiveness in the stories they told and the issues that they dealt with. Because, like the title implies, it was kind of an issue of the week sitcom. And you had everything from, you know, like child pornography to suicide and everything in between. There were also just episodes that were a little sillier, obviously, but it was very honest. I thought the acting was so good. The chemistry of what became the main four in season two and on of Joe, Blair, Natalie, and Tootie was so good. And they were archetypes, but also felt very well-rounded. Mm-hmm. Like, Blair is my favorite character, and she is a rich, snobby, blonde, white woman. And yet, she is so genuine that it's like, she's not mean, really. which I feel like would be the trap that you would fall in writing a character like that. She's just rich and ignorant. And over time, she becomes less so. And that's like, well, yep, that's how a teenager would grow from being a millionaire to everyday person. Like, they very specifically had an episode where when she started college, she wasn't popular anymore.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Because in college, that kind of rich veneer didn't serve her anymore. It actually made her unrelatable instead of like queen bee like she was in high school. And there are jokes, you know, those when you hear a joke in a show or a movie and you're like, I would have given anything to be the first one to have written that joke. Yeah, been able to hang my hat on that joke. There's a joke from Blair in the suicide episode where they have a character and who is only introduced for that episode because, again, 80s sitcom.
Right.
And she dies by suicide. And at the end of the episode, Mrs. Garrett, the kind of matriarch, and the four girls are helping clean out her dorm room and going to send stuff to her parents. And Blair notices that they're sending stuff to Vegas. And she was like, and they figure out through some jokes that her parents are getting divorced. And then someone says, do you think that's why? And Mrs. Garrett explains, like, you'll never really know. Like, she gives kind of the lesson of that. And Blair goes, yeah, you would never kill yourself over divorce. I've lived through it 3 times. It's delivered so well, and you just don't see it coming, but it also is so what that character would say, because she's not being mean. She's just like, y'all, divorce is a part of life. I love that the show could really teach you a lesson and then just whap you in the face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With a joke like that. And I think it was, I mean, it was on for 9 seasons. Clearly it was popular, but like, I think because it was a spinoff of Different Strokes, and it was an all-female cast,
mm-hmm.
that it had every opportunity to fail.
Mm.
I think at that time, I guarantee you, if you look back at articles, I bet they were sexist. I remember they talked about how they used to call them the fats of life because they were real people with real bodies.
Right.
And they didn't make them diet or anything. They were like, whatever your body is, that's what your body is, which is great for them in the show, but also they're teenagers growing up on camera.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something so fun about it. And they recently did one of those the live from, you know what I mean? Where they redo the sitcoms and it's live.
Yeah. Like, does ABC do those?
The Jimmy Kimmel ABC thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They did Different Strokes and Facts of Life recently.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize they did Different Strokes too. Those are both two shows that like are definitely like formative of my childhood.
I love both of those shows so much.
Like, I used to really wish that I could live in the house with them, with Mrs. Garrett. I thought that'd be so much fun.
Oh, Mrs. Garrett, everyone wanted Mrs. Garrett to be their mother. Like,
yeah.
You just did. She was amazing.
Because I just always wanted to be hanging out with friends. And I'm like, oh, God, if I lived there, I'd always be hanging out with my friends.
JW, this is, okay, strong best category. Two absolutely heavy hitters of comedies, American Dad and Facts of Life. Let's move on to the favorite category. What's your first favorite show?
This is my first drama that I'm putting on something, and it's 24.
Whoa! I've been waiting for this for a long time. I grew up on 24.
I was in college for its big, like, popular run, and it was appointment television. I remember pre-gaming with 24 and then going out to whatever it was.
I was the only one on my floor with a TiVo, and it was because of 24 and Lost. Those are the big two.
Oh, and what a unique show. And if you've never seen 24 before, it literally every season takes place in a 24-hour period. Each episode is an hour. It has so it's all real time. And to see them in some seasons struggle through what that means,
right.
is so fun. Like, infamously in season 2, his daughter, Jack Bauer's daughter, Kim, just is chased by a cougar for like 3 hours because they were like, we've got to yeah. give this main credited someone something to do.
Yeah.
They even referenced that in Happy Endings, which is really funny.
That's right. Which shares an actress, Alicia Cuthbert.
Oh, yeah. This was a show, though, that I think one of the reasons I also loved it so much is it's the first show that I remember thinking anything can happen. No one is safe. They do not mind killing off their characters. They don't mind bringing back. There's a character in season 1 that survived, and they brought them back as a main character in season 6. And it was just like, yeah, that's
right.
Sure. Sometimes people return back to the fictional CTU because they did used to work there and they came back and now they're a manager and or whatever it is.
And it's only been 6 days. Technically, right?
Years passed between the seasons.
That is true. That is true.
Okay.
I love your version better, Brandy, where it's like 8 terrible days for this man in a row.
You know what's funny? Though? Those seasons were clearly defined, though. Like, you could probably almost do a mini, like, best favorite forever of 24 seasons.
I tell people if you're only going to watch one, for me, seasons 3 and 5 have the best overarching plots and cast. So those are the, like, the good ones to me. Because that's, again, why it's, like, favorite and not best, to your point, is there's some seasons that I'm like, well, there's some fun moments, but overall, it's kind of stupid. And then there's some that I'm like, oh, every episode's great.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just looking through, like, the quick little blurbs on each season. I think you're right. Season 3 was the deadly virus season. I think that might be the best one of them all.
Season 3 is probably the best.
And then 5 was the, you know, Jack is believed to be dead. And it's kind of like his comeback. You're right. Those are probably the 2 best.
How long was it on?
It originally was on 8 seasons. Then it did a halvesy 12-hour season. And then it did 24 Legacy, which introduced a new main person.
Right. That didn't last very long, though. The Legacy, right?
Just the 1 season.
And that halvesy one, that was kind of like, it was kind of like a break, and it was like a 24-hour, like, presents sort of 24 presents sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, it was still the half day, and it was 12 episodes, and it was like 12 hours in a row, I think. I think they might have skipped here and there. It, like, was in 20. It was clearly meant as a love letter and a goodbye to the 2 main characters of Jack Bauer and Chloe O'Brien.
Yeah. Oh, Chloe. Iconic all-time character, like, so good.
So good. Brandy, have you seen 24?
I have not seen a single episode.
A comedian named Marilyn Raskob is, I believe, how you pronounce it.
I do like her.
She's great. And she played Chloe O'Brien, who was a techie introduced in season 3. And she just played this perfectly deadpan character who, the joke was eventually in, like, the meme community that Chloe O'Brien just could do whatever. She was kind of magical, like she would always figure out the tech.
Boy, what's going on?
I'm not getting it.
What's it gonna take?
I don't know.
Chloe, if you can't stop this worm, then I have to tell Jack to reroute that plane to wherever Nina wants.
Tony, please let me work. No, stop. Stop the process.
But it's cycling through, Chloe. It's almost back up.
It's a defensive ploy built into the worm. It's not what we thought. It's a simple backpop virus. I just strip out the resource fork.
But look at the CPU. It's almost 100%.
Damn it, Adam, stop. What you're seeing on the monitor isn't real.
Do what she says. Right, it stopped. Wait, what's going on?
I think it's resetting itself. Got it.
Jack.
Yeah?
We're back up.
Fully functional?
Fully functional.
We're resuming our approach. Good work.
But she was also, like, so antisocial. But because she was so good at her job, she kept having to be a leader. And she just didn't want it. And they become, like, best platonic, never a romantic pairing, but just really good buds. And that friendship of, like, field agent and support tech person. And also, honestly, you don't see it a lot, man and woman. Like, it was really cool.
Yeah, like non-romantic.
Yeah. And it never was. And she had a romantic life, though. She got a husband. She had a child. And I loved it. I love seeing the inner workings of a show. There's something about that that's actually really fun to me to see, like, oh, how did the writers, producers, directors, actors get around real life things that you have to deal with?
Yeah. Oh, man, I love that show. Okay, so what are you standing up next to 24 is your second favorite show?
And now this one, that one was for Dan, and this one's for you, Brandy, because my second favorite, and my favorite, honestly, I say my favorite is Jim and the Holograms, and I'm wearing...
I love it.
Wearing the shirt right now.
I love it!
Look at the shirt! Oh my God, I love it!
Jim and the Holograms, for those of you don't know, was an 80s cartoon. It was created by Christy Marks, who worked on G.I. Joe. And was basically tasked with, we're making a competitive line to Barbie. Here are the characters. Here are the bare basics. Write a 65-episode TV series to sell these toys. But she got a lot of creative freedom. And she made one of the most fun, entertaining, and complex shows. Because she just let it, like, be real. Like, honestly, It's Jim and the Holograms is funny because in your comedy, drama, and unscripted categorization, I was like, it's more comedy. But if someone came on here and made a hard drama argument, I wouldn't be surprised by that. But it's also a kids' cartoon show, so it's kind of hard. It's so the plot. This is wild. I had to actually talk about this show in a one-person show I did at some point. You've never seen it, right, Dan?
No, I haven't.
Gotcha. So the plot, and I mean episode one, starts with a character named Jerrica Benton at her father's funeral. You quickly find out her mother also died in a plane crash recently.
Yikes, heavy.
That's the opening of this children's cartoon show. She has now inherited half of a music company. The other half is with the show's villain, Eric Raymond. She needs to find a way to make money because the record label of Starlight Music supports a foster house because her parents, who have, as I remind you, now both died in the first 3 minutes of the show. She and her sister, Kimber, are biological children of her parents, but everyone else, including their other bandmates, were foster kids that they just adopted and built it up and built this big foster house for all these girls. And I mean, there's like 12 to 20 foster kids, all with names and personalities and a whole thing. Her dad was a hologram scientist. And he hid his technology, Dan, because he was afraid of the military using them because they were too good.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Kept him under lock and key.
So she finds a note. No, she finds earrings. I don't know what's a note. She finds star-shaped earrings, and a hologram leads her to underneath this old arena or something where she finds Synergy, which is a representation of a holographic woman. You find out way later it's her mom. And he left all these electronic things, musicians and music instruments and all this stuff. And she creates the idea of Jim, which is literally a holographic projection that appears over her.
When she touches her earring and she says, "Showtime, Synergy."
That goes over her.
And then she transforms into Jim.
But it is a hologram because they literally can't have people touch her hair because it's not there.
Right.
And they reference that in the show multiple times.
But wait, hold on. The physics here is confusing.
Sure. Because it's,
yeah. No. And it's guess fake. What? Guess what, Dan? It will never make sense.
So Jim is Jim, a human person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Jerrica. Real life, she's Jerrica. Jim is the persona she creates.
Okay, so Jerrica is a human person.
Yes.
Who wears earrings, then touches those earrings, and she becomes a hologram or becomes like a projection of herself behind the hologram.
The earrings project the hologram over her.
Okay, so what are there's other holograms as well, because the title presupposes there's multiple.
So they cheekily named the group Jim and the Holograms because then just her sisters, Kimber, and then her sister Kimber, and then her foster sisters, Aja and Shayna, just were like growing up, they played music with their mom. Okay. Their mom was a musician. And so they go and they do this battle of the bands. Jerrica's Jim, the rest of them as themselves. And they beat the bad girl band, the Misfits. And then that money becomes the thing that helps support, and eventually she buys Eric Raymond out of his half of Starlight Music, but then he starts his own music company for the Misfits, Misfits Music. And then that's the central conflict. But you're not even ready, because that's not even the weirdest part. So Jerrica has a longtime childhood sweetheart named Rio, the worst man in television. He's such a piece of garbage. And he also falls in love with the Jim persona, and he actively cheats on both of them with the other one, but she's like, but both of them are me.
Right. And she has to know the whole time.
So you're not cheating. Like, I know you're cheating on me, but I also know that you're not.
This is wild. Absolutely wild.
And also, I will say that the wildest thing for me as a kid watching this was that when Jerrica or Jim would kiss Rio, they French kiss. You don't see tongue.
Hard.
But
hard.
Like, they're in there.
Oh, nice.
They're in there. And I was always like, oh, wow. Like, yeah, they're really
kissing. These characters are in their 20s.
Yeah,
they like very much established.
Like, these kisses, they're getting it on after.
So every episode also had 2 or 3 minute-ish long music videos, and they were original songs. And you got Jim and the Hologram songs. You got Misfits songs. You got sometimes they duoed. And in season 3, they introduce a third band, the Stingers. Mm. And like they have songs too. And the music is great because they made music that was episode specific. But like, oh, you could imagine this just being a single.
Right.
They were 80s hits.
Yes.
Outrageous.
It's truly outrageous. Thank you. That was perfect. It's worth watching some of the Christy Marks episodes, the ones she personally wrote, because those are the plot-heavy ones. Because I also want to be clear that Jim also saves the president in one episode. So it's still like a kid's show. It was still dumb as hell sometimes.
Jim was a superhero.
Saves the president, to me, sounds like, is there a 24 Jim and the Holograms crossover?
Oh, please make it happen.
Oh, I love it. All right, JW, on that note, we must get to your forever shows. We're moving on to your forever category. What is your first pick that you would watch over and over?
Yeah, so I have a drama and an unscripted in this one. So no comedy, shockingly. My first forever is Taskmaster.
We finally get a game show. Finally. And also, too, before you dive into it, JW, just a little bit of additional background. So JW and I met because, you know, I work in TV development. And I went to a show in New York that JW put on where he was putting a game show, an original game show concept of his up on stage. And I had an absolute ball. I introduced myself after the show. So I, you know, when your list came in, I'm like, there's a shockingly few game show titles on this list.
Yeah. And I was even a game theory and a math major. Like, all I do is games. My prototype of my board game is like right in front of me. I'll say this, though. When I was doing it was your criteria, because game shows are, I love them. I love the gameplay. I love it. It's just that when I watch a game show, I'm like done. And then I watch it again next week. Like, I can't binge a game show as well.
Right.
Because at some point, like, it's maybe Family Feud. But even then, after like 3 or so, I'm like, well, I'm kind of mentally done with this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, perfect segue. So what makes Taskmaster stand out? And for those who don't know it, what is the premise?
So one great thing is anyone can access Taskmaster because they lovingly put full episodes in their official channel on YouTube.
Oh, nice.
It's a BBC show. So it's also my only kind of non-American show. Sailor Moon, actually. But you know what I mean? Like, the English dub was what I got. So,
right.
But it's a show that has such a fascinating premise. So the Taskmaster is a person named Greg Daniels, and he's got an assistant, Alex Horn. And they invite every season, they invite 5 comedians or personalities. Usually it's 3 or 4 comedians and then one person who's like a host, a presenter, or whatever. And for the last couple of months, they've been separately doing the same task. And so it'll be something as simple as throw the frisbee the furthest or something like that. And they'll give them restrictions and parameters and rules. And now they're all getting together every episode to watch what each other did. And then the Taskmaster ranks them 1 to 5 and gives them the corresponding points. And so it is first of all, it's side-splittingly hilarious. You also truly grow to learn over a season how the 5 brains work. And also in a well-cast season, it's fascinating to watch different people tackle the same problem.
That's cool. I like that.
Like, even as something as simple as there's a room with 1 light switch, you have to figure out what the switch does. And you see some people just muscle through it and like flick it, then run around and then flick it again. You've got some people who follow the wire. You've got some people who turn off every other switch and then go back. And it's so interesting to see. And then what's cool is they have little gimmicks. Like, the first challenge is they bring in something for the prize pot. So it'll be like the best small thing. And they all present and they really did bring it in and they present it. They get points for that. And at the end, the person who wins the episode actually gets all five of those things.
Right.
And so sometimes, because these people usually have a little bit of money, like they're known personalities, sometimes they get expensive prize pools because someone donated like their like Emmy or something.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, this is a crazy thing to do. And every season is about 10 episodes long, super fun. It is definitely a show that if you were to dive into it, there are better seasons than others because it all truly comes down to the cast.
Do you consider it a game show or a competition series? Because I think that is a distinction in the unscripted genre. Like competition series is, like we were talking about earlier, your Top Chefs, your Top Models, your skill-based sort of things. This is somewhat skill-based, but not really. It is arced over a season like some of those other shows, but it feels more gamey. How would you categorize it between those two kind of distinctions?
It's definitely closer in my mind to a game show. And again, it's partly because British panel shows are game shows in British BBC culture, right?
Right.
So to us, I think it's hard for us to categorize, but to them, they're like, oh, it's a panel show. That's what we would call it.
Right.
But most panel shows are game shows because there's a point system and there's a prize every episode.
Yeah.
Really, just the difference is that in one season, it's the same five contestants every episode.
Right. Right.
But otherwise, I think it's full game show.
Did you watch the... Because you were talking about this, I'm like, I feel like there was an American version of this. This happened.
Yeah.
And I looked it up. It was Comedy Central. Reggie Watts was the host.
He was good. And Alex Horn was the crossover. So the assistant from the first one was the assistant.
When was that on?
This was 2018, it looks like. Only 8 episodes. The panelists were Dylan Francis, Freddie Highmore, Kate Berlant, Lisa Lampanelli, and Ron Funches. That's interesting casting.
Ron Funches was great.
I won't say who won the season if you want to go and watch it.
Don't.
it's
and there are great international versions. Taskmaster New Zealand, great. There's definitely great. It's like one of those that's now been franchised to like 10 countries. The American version was a half an hour instead of an hour, and it just does not work for the format of the show. You don't get enough time to really let the people do the thing.
Well, would you say that included in this being your forever show, like just the British version, or like would you put all of them together and like, you know, like to have more shows?
I would definitely. Luckily, the British version now has like 13 seasons and some specials. So it's a lot of content already. New Zealand, I've watched both seasons and it's great. And there's a couple more I want to check out. So I think in my head, it's the Taskmaster franchise. But I also understand that in this hypothetical afterlife, that means I have to trudge through the American one, to be fair. And that just means that I landed in hell instead of heaven. And that's fine.
I don't know. I think for this, though, like, because it's not like the same people, I think you'd have to choose, for my opinion, I think you'd have to like choose one version of it.
Yeah. And I would choose the British one if that's the case, for sure.
Okay. All right. So what are you watching alongside Taskmaster as your second forever show?
And get ready for me to fully cheat. So,
okay, let's hear it.
And I put this on my list like this, but the Dick Wolf Chicago Thrillogy, as I call it.
Thrillogy?
Of Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, and Chicago PD. I have canceled plans.
What?
I have lied to get out of meetings at work to watch it the next day. I love these three shows.
Okay, hold on. Wait, hold on. Let's back up here. So Dick Wolf, iconic name in TV history, has created
Law and Order.
Ever heard of it? The Law and Order franchise, right? But I will say, in previous iterations of these conversations, if someone is like Law and Order, we make them choose. You choose original, you choose SVU, you choose your version, right?
This is why I am going to differ from you on this, Dan.
Okay.
Because unlike the Law and Order world, which really are like Law and Order is a completely separate show than SVU, right?
Separate show, but is it the same universe though? Right, there's crossover shit that happens, right?
Sometimes, like, okay. It's a different show than Criminal Intent. But I feel like with the Fire, PD, and Med, granted, I haven't watched full episodes of all of them, but I see, I watch a lot of NBC, so I see a lot of previews.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like the stories, it's in this the vein of the Grey's Anatomy universe, except even more crossover. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay. Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice are different shows, and Grey's Anatomy and Station 19 are different shows. But I feel like with Fire, PD, and Med, this literally is, you're going from, we're at the fire station, and now we're at the, I liken it to how Beverly Hills Housewives went into Vanderpump.
Sure. Okay.
So that's the argument that I would make for it being like, it really is, it's one big show over with three settings.
I'm not sold, but I can be swayed. JW, okay. tell me why.
JW, talk about it. Talk about it.
Yeah, I'll tell you two things. First of all, Brandy, thank you, because I'm going to make a very similar argument, but I could also pick if I absolutely had to. So what they do now, just so folks who aren't familiar know, is that starting at 8 o'clock, they air Med, Fire, and PD in that order, all on the same night, all on Wednesday, and often plot lines and characters completely cross over from episode to episode. So you are watching a 3-hour long movie pretty much every single time. And sometimes it's literal, like the next episode just starts. And it's like from one scene to the next. And you can tell they filmed it as a thing and just decided, well, I guess this is when we sort of focus more on the fire station. So, but there are episodes of Chicago Fire that if you tried to watch them separately, Dan, you'd be like, half of this is at the hospital.
Okay.
Fire started first. Beget PD, Beget Med. And then they also had Chicago Justice for like 10 episodes. That didn't pan out.
Remember that. That's right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Dick Wolf's not perfect.
Sometimes he fails. Sorry, Dick.
But I love the characters. It's really found that perfect sweet spot of it tickles my want to see people deal with emergencies and also still have interpersonal drama. Chicago Med, and I even was interviewed specifically on this. So many shows talk about diversity, and especially in the last couple of years, we've had an elevated conversation about like racial diversity. Chicago Med has more Black female characters than any show that's not an exclusively Black cast.
Oh, wow.
And they are in charge. They pass the Bechdel test constantly. It's so interesting because that's also very representative of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago Fire is probably the second best at that. And then Chicago PD. I have to also watch Chicago PD because it fills out the universe. Chicago PD can get a little propaganda for my taste. Like,
but I will tell you what, JW, I think you've won me over. And I think the fact that they're all programmed on the same night, back to back to back, the fact that like the thing that once used to be like the sweeps week, big crossover thing for Grey's or some of those other shows is now just kind of like the weekly occurrence.
It's what they do every week.
Right. I think I can accept this because they are so interwoven. My question for you, though, is you have to watch them on a loop in the afterlife, right? So like, do you go... I'm just wondering how you would...
The fans of the show, and I've contributed maybe as an wiki editor to some of this, have created the perfect chronological order to watch them in.
You have a timeline order? That's what I was hoping for. Okay, good.
I would request permission to watch it in that order.
I would grant that. Absolutely.
But you know what I'll do for you? I'll make myself also have to watch Chicago Justice for those 10 episodes because I think that's the gift I can give back is having to die through those.
Exactly. JW, I'll tell you what. What an incredible episode, but also list for every category, top to bottom. This was so great.
Yeah. I'm just really happy to see shows like this on the Criteria because I feel like this is what I was hoping for, like with this whole concept, was to get a huge range of TV. And like you gave it to us.
I found one tiny through line because I was like, oh, is this like a mess? I clearly love a big cast.
Yes.
Yeah.
You love a huge cast.
I love a big ensemble cast. It's not a lot of shows that have like a clear lead. It's clearly something I like a group project.
That's right. You do. Exactly. You like a group project unless the lead is Jack Bauer, in which case.
Well,
he'll just go ahead and save. He'll go ahead and save that day 8 times in a row and it'll be great.
All right. Well, to recap, American Dad and Facts of Life are the best shows that JW Crump has ever seen. 24 and Jim and the Holograms are his favorite of shows of all time. And he would watch Taskmaster and the Dick Wolf Chicago universe of PD, Fire, and Med forever.
AKA the Thrillogy, which is also incredible.
The thrill, the Chicago universe Thrillogy.
Thrillogy, exactly.
I got that trending one time on Twitter 2 years ago, and it was my proudest moment.
I love
screenshot
it.
Screenshot it.
Oh, God, I'm so happy.
JW, we have one more thing. If you have the time for it, this is a very, very quick one. But we will put you on the spot. We have a lightning round that we did not tell you about.
Oh, okay.
I know. This is very game showy, so hopefully you're into it.
Perfect.
But for this, we're going to have you build a mini BFF criteria where we ask you to choose a best favorite in forever and a surprise category. And this one is specifically for you. Now, we've had Taskmaster on the list. So without including Taskmaster, because I just don't think we've talked about game shows enough. So give us your, and you don't need to do two for each, it's just a 1-1-1, a best, a favorite, and a forever game shows. Trivia or classic, but just like non-Taskmaster, like iconic game shows. What's your best favorite forever lightning round?
Great. Best game show, I'll give it to Family Feud.
Nice.
Okay.
It's the ultimate play along with friends, debate, go ah kind of show. And then I would say favorite is probably Press Your Luck.
Ooh, fun one.
Probably no whammies.
No whammies.
I don't think it's like actually that good of a game, but it brings me so much joy. And that stressful final moment with the final two.
Mm.
There is a super cut of like the 10 most like dramatic like final two who's going to win at moments.
Oh, nice.
And it's so fun to watch people free. That was a show where people lost their minds.
Yeah.
And I love that. And then, ooh, a forever one for a game show. Let's see. See, I want to say a classic like Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy, but honestly, I would truly get bored of that pretty quickly.
Mm.
I just would. Like after a while, I'm like, how much trivia can I say? Sure. I would say that for a forever game show, this is so stupid. I think it would actually be really fun to watch the Newlywed Game forever.
Fun.
That's a really fun one.
That's a really good one.
Because I feel like I've watched so many YouTube videos of like 100 minutes of Newlywed insane answers. Right. So I feel like I've already done this.
Holy shit. So your lightning round mini BFF criteria of game shows only. Best is Family Feud. Favorite is Press Your Luck. Forever is the Newlywed Game. That's an iconic slate of game shows right there. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't thought about Newlywed Game in such a long time. But when I was like, that's the only thing clips are coming in my mind right now.
And, you know, with that, it's a wrap on this episode of TV BFFs. Thank you so much to our guest, JW Crump. JW, where can we find you and what are you up to?
Yeah, on Twitter at JW Crump. It's C-R-U-M-P, like the dance, as I always say. And on Instagram, it's JW underscore Crump because someone stole it from me. And then, like you introduced me earlier, I am a co-host with my wonderful co-host, Hannah Jane and Alexander, for Pod Lead 'Em. That's Top Model Podcast spelled backwards. It's a recap all the way starting in cycle one. And we just released the finale of cycle 14. And I've started recording 15 already. So we are already 14 in. And not to brag, but there's a lot of Top Model podcast in us. Ours is the highest rated, most subscribed. So there's a lot out there if you don't like us, but I think you could start with us. And then if you don't like us, you have other options.
They're going to love you, JW.
All right. Well, please rate, review, and subscribe and check us out on Instagram at TVBFF Podcast, or you can email us at TVBFFpodcast@gmail.com because we want to know what's your six.
Yes. We want to hear from you all. Please send us your own personal TVBFF criteria. We want to know your best shows, your favorite shows, your forever shows. So send us your picks. We'll share our favorites on the podcast. And until next time, goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.